877-526-6123. That's 877-KBOO-123. Or go to kboo.fm/vehicle.
Morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, November 19th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guests far apart in terms of territory, close together in heart and soul and direction. We have Paul Schroeder joining us, the Executive Director of the New City Initiative, and we also will be speaking once again with Mazen Khamsia, who is the Director, of course, of the Palestine Natural History Museum and a journalist and one of our most trusted commentators on the situation in occupied Palestine. First, we're going to go to... We have just a few headlines to start us off. A horse was euthanized yesterday after pit bulls attacked. Of course, as always, the dog owner said she's stunned. They were such sweet, loving little dogs. The 13-year-old mare was euthanized after the pit bulls lived across the street got loose and attacked her. The horse was named Paisley, and it's very sad, and it seems to happen with an alarming regularity, and the story always is the same. American Indian and Alaska Native children are exposed to violence at rates higher than any other social group in the nation. This comes according to a new report that urges creation of a new Native American Affairs Director, additional federal funding, and other measures to combat the problem. The report came out just this week, the U.S. Department of Justice Advisory Committee. Based on the public input and research, the committee assessed the effects of violence on tribal youth, and they say that they have come up with an action plan, and I suppose we're going to have to wait and see how much action is actually in the plan. Right now, we have action in the plan right here on the streets of Portland, Oregon. Paul Schroeder, Executive Director of the New City Initiative, is joining us to talk about that. Good morning, Paul. Thanks.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
We're well, thanks. And yourself?
Doing terrific. Thank you so much.
Well, we are here, of course, on behalf of those who aren't doing well at all.
Yes, indeed. And this is the time of year as the weather turns cold and rainy, the emergency shelter system opens up for families and for individuals. It's a great time to be mindful of folks who have to sleep outdoors.
Here's what I don't understand. If they could come up with warming shelters when the temperature drops, why can't we have shelter and resources for people on a regular basis? Driving around, I see so many empty buildings. I see, and I think, well, it's just simply the only obstacle here is greed.
One thing I would say is that there has been some progress in that direction. So a few years ago, the Goose Hollow Family Shelter, for example, which is where the Day of Homelessness Awareness this Friday is going to begin, the WASP, that is. That used to be open only during the winter months as an emergency shelter. Now it's open year-round for families. I know that there's lots of conversations that are happening right now at many levels about solutions to homelessness, including micro-housing, building tiny houses, Some of those ideas include like villages of tiny houses. Sometimes folks are talking about a scattered site approach, maybe having one or two micro houses on a church or congregation property. So, I mean, there is lots of conversation about how can we create more capacity to support those who really need that support.
So tell us a little, bring up listeners up to speed on the events taking place on Friday and how they can become involved in this project.
Sure. So next week is National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. It's a national event, and this will be the fifth annual Day of Homelessness Awareness in Portland and Multnomah County. And the Day of Homelessness Awareness, it takes the form of an early morning walk. This year, the theme of the Day of Homelessness Awareness is In Their Step. And it really what this is, it's intended to be a kind of experiential journey whereby the participants are taking a walk in the steps of a homeless family. So as I said before, we're going to start at Boots Hollow Family Shelter, which is located at the First United Methodist Church in Boots Hollow downtown. And it starts at 7:30 a.m., so it's bright and early. But that's the time when families actually leave the shelter and go out to face their challenges, to find work, to find housing, to take their kids to school, to find food and clothing. And so what we are doing is we're inviting people to, you know, sort of step into the shoes of those families this one day out of the year, to take an early morning walk in the cold and semi-darkness, and to consider some scenarios that we're going to be presenting about real life families that are trying to confront their challenges and take steps forward in their life. So it starts at 7:30 at the Goose Hollow Family Shelter, First United Methodist Church downtown. That we'll be walking by Clay Street Table at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church, where there's going to be a hot breakfast and coffee for folks, and then on to the 13 Salmon Family Day Center, which is located at First Unitarian Church downtown. And First Unitarian at 9 o'clock is hosting a forum that's being sponsored by the Portland Human Rights Commission on creative solutions to homelessness. And so from 9 to noon, we're going to be talking about many of these very issues that you brought up: tiny houses, a housing trust fund, what can be done to engage the creativity of the community to help end this terrible problem.
Some of the encampments, of course, Right to Dream 2, the largest, and then there are many, many others around the area. They'll be participating, and their voices are going to be heard at the event. Is that correct?
Yes, we believe that we'll have folks from Right to Dream and others. At last year's Day of Homelessness Awareness, we actually walked through Old Town, and the Right to Dream 2 camp was one of the stops along the way. There was a tour that was offered. We have a different route this year, and we are focusing this year on family homelessness specifically. But the truth is that everyone is a part of a family. Everyone comes from a family, and so really, you know, everyone is someone's son or daughter. And you know, all homelessness in some sense is family homelessness.
Right, and so this event does generate a considerable degree of momentum in the right direction, and the idea of coming up with creative solutions and perhaps attracting funding to make those solutions real. Mm-hmm. So that's what we can hope to accomplish on Friday. Starts early in the morning. Just very briefly before we let you go, the time and place for people who miss it the first go around.
Yes, so it's at 7:30 a.m. It starts at First United Methodist Church downtown. And for more information, if you can go to the website newcityinitiative.net/awareness, and that will give you, there's a map of the route, and there's lots of information for folks who want to learn more.
Great. Thank you so much, Paul. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and we will look forward to seeing you on Friday. Bright and early in the morning, bright and early
in
the dark. Thanks again. We were speaking, of course, with Paul Schroeder. He's the executive director of the New City Initiative, and there will be the event coming up on Friday. He will obviously be there, as will many of us. We turn now to a situation further afield. the tragedy in occupied Palestine is simply inconceivable. We're trying to get Mazen Khamsia on the line. As you can well imagine, it's not an easy thing to do. It is a very difficult thing to reach out across communication lines, which are very often banjaxed by Israel, actually, just to go ahead and say it. They, of course, don't want real news getting out, only the news that is filtered through the American media, which has done a yeoman job of presenting exactly the story that Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu would prefer to have the world hear and see. What you're hearing and seeing in mainstream media is a far, far cry from what is really happening on the ground. The explosion of emotion on the part of disaffected youth, the idea, and some for many young Palestinians, the idea of any employment at all is laughable, and the pressures on families when we talk about people being refugees in their own land, that's not a metaphor for anything. Palestinians really and literally and truly are refugees in their own land. They watch from afar, over walls, through fences, as other people occupy their homes, their land, and in some cases destroy ancient olive groves that whose roots reach deep into generations of families, not simply into the dry earth, but down through bloodlines. All this gone, all of it taken, and the world remained silent. Mazen Khamsia was out of the country for a couple of weeks, and he writes that he returned to find the situation more tense than it was 2 weeks ago. And how? I believe this was written before the tragedy at the mosque. It's difficult to imagine. Well, it isn't difficult actually to imagine the feelings that exploded, and it's not going to be difficult to imagine Israel's response. In fact, it's already coming. The house of the houses of families of these people, the people who perpetrated the act of violence, those are being destroyed, and we can expect a great deal more destruction. And we can also expect to see Americans sit on their hands, say nothing, do nothing. The silence of complicity in what will surely be the murders of many more Palestinians, and as a death count continues to climb. This was indeed a terrible act of violence, and certainly no one condones it. Certainly no one feels the slightest sense of anything but deep remorse, terrible sadness, terrible regret. But at the same time, some effort somewhere down the line must be made to understand exactly what has been taken from a people, and how we got to this, how America became the wedge that allowed Israel to be hammered down into a part of the world where it would behoove anyone to be a good neighbor, when we've seen anything but. That said, it's very difficult to try to get Mazen on the line. We will keep trying. However, returning, of course, to this side of the water, the Keystone XL bill failed to pass Congress. Woo-hoo. But you know what? This is going to come back. And we can say that this is a victory. However, there's still Enbridge. There are still right here in our own backyard, the Pacific Connector. There are projects all across this country. This whole nation is riddled with pipelines, riddled with disasters waiting to happen. And when they do, we are so utterly and completely unprepared to cope with the massive cleanup. Perhaps, though, they aren't even considering the cleanup. Perhaps, though, the sums of money involved are so great that it is worth it to the oil industry, the energy business, to go ahead and build the pipelines, let the disasters happen, because they don't have to live with it. They will never live in Nebraska. They will never live in Oklahoma. They will never live along the putrefying Gulf Coast where the refineries are located. No, the people in the corner offices will never have to see or live in the results of their handiwork. This has been a Cascadia for Wednesday, November 19th, 2014. Tommy Dean engineered the show for us today. Thanks for that, Tommy. Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Today on Flashpoints, we proudly present an extended excerpt of a discussion from a 1998 event with the late great journalist Gary Webb. Also featured is organizer and journalist Martha Honey. The moderator is our very own Dennis Bernstein. My name is Mike Biggs, and for Dennis Bernstein, all this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.